Hello, I'm Jim Ausman, and I was invited to come and talk to you about my ideas about research. And I'd like to tell you five important things that I know that are very helpful in becoming a successful clinician, scientist, and person. First thing is observation. Let's say a patient comes to see you, and the patient comes with the family. You see them in the in your consulting room. You see them in the hospital. Normally, you'd ask them some questions. You see what you can learn. But there's more than you can learn by just talking to the patient. You have to observe. You observe the patient. You observe how the patient's dressed. You observe their speech. You observe how they're talking about their problems. You observe where they look. You observe the family's reaction. You look at the husband. You look at the wife or the spouse. You have to put into your mind's computer every minute information that you're learning, because you have to make a decision about the patient. You make a decision about the family. You have to make a decision on what to do. And you only have a short time to get to know them. So you have to use every minute and second of that short time to accumulate as much information as you can about the patient, so you understand the patient and the patient's disease. So the key is to keep your brain's computer on all the time. You watch them if they're walking down the hall, you're seeing another patient. You see if the limp that you saw in the room is a limp that they have walking down the hall. You watch them interact with people. You learn everything you can, and you store it in your brain's computer. Now, the second thing, let's take an example, research. A patient comes to you, and let's say the most common disease in the country today is COVID, in your country, everybody's. It's one that concerns everybody. Everybody's been frightened about the disease. A patient comes to you complaining that they feel nauseated, they don't very feel well, they've got muscle aches and pains, they have some trouble breathing, and they say, well, I've lost my sense of smell and taste. Well, you're asking all these questions. That's the complaint the patient has. Through your mind are going various other possibilities. Does the patient have influenza? Does everybody in the family have influenza? Is this something that's in your neighborhood or in your schools? Or is this something unusual? Does the patient have increased intracranial pressure with nausea and vomiting? How can we explain all these things? So you need to ask the patient the questions so you can find out in the same when you go to the laboratory. What is the question I need to answer? So you have some ideas and you go look and you examine the patient and you don't find much, and you do some laboratory work. You find some inflammatory cells. You know the temperature is up. And so you think the patient may have an infectious process. You've looked in the fundi, you don't see any, you see good venous pulsations, so it's not intracranial pressure. It could be many other things, but those would be the things that would be most common. Yes, they've had people in their neighborhood. So you go to the literature and you take all this information and you say, what do people know in the literature? How do people present? You find they present this way with an influenza. They present this way with COVID. They present this way with other diseases. And you read more and more about it. And you find out, well, if they lose their smell and sense of smell and taste, that's a hallmark of people who have COVID. Now, not everybody has that symptom, but a high percentage do. And so you begin to form a list, which is your differential diagnosis, or what are the possibilities? Or if you're in the laboratory doing the experiment, you see some reactions, you've done your research, and you have to record that. You have to be very observant. So now let's say you've gone through the literature. You say, well, I think the patient may have COVID. and you read the literature further and you say, well, some people in Europe and America don't treat the patient right away. That's a little strange to you, because if a patient comes with some symptoms, you want to do something to treat the patient. Okay, we do that. So you look and you find in Bangladesh, they treat the patient with ivermectin and the patient gets well. They can't afford to have a vaccine. In India, they tried the vaccine, it didn't work. And you know that they then tried ivermectin and it worked. You go to have a patient who comes from South Africa. That's where there's endemic malaria. And these people are treated with hydroxychloroquine, which prevents the COVID disease. Maybe this is a patient who broke through. What are you going to do next? In Peru, they do the same thing. You go to the United States, they don't treat early. There's no drug for treating patients early, they say. That's what you're told. That's not what your experience is. They say in the United States, we want to wait. Well, okay, we want to wait, but the patient can get rapidly worse and deteriorate. Then they have to go into the hospital, they're put on a ventilator. 70% of those patients died. So you don't have much room for error here. So let's say you don't know, you go ahead and you treat the patient. You're able to find a vaccine, you vaccinate the patient, but wait a minute, what's the data on the vaccine? Well, they say it's safe, hasn't been tested extensively in animals. It's going to take two vaccine shots to do this. Has the patient got that kind of time? You've read some reports that they treat people with steroids because they think it's a hyperimmune response to this organism. And so if your treatment's not working, then you have to go to the next level of treatment. But you have to do what is common sense and what comes from experience. So you go ahead and let's say they treat the patient, and let's say the patient did get better with ivermectin. And when the patient got better with ivermectin, you feel very happy about that. The family's happy. The patient gets worse, they're going to be very worried. But you read the literature some more and you find out what are the results, what happens with these people, what happens with this drug. And you find very confusing information in the literature. You find that some people say it's a very toxic drug. You find other people say it's not. You know that in your country, they've given it to many people because of parasitic disease without any problems. It's been around for years, decades. So that's strange to you. So the literature doesn't relate to your experience. And you look at the results in the United States and in Europe, you find there's very high death rates. And that doesn't make sense to you. You look in these other countries, they're very low death rates. So the question is, what's the truth? What are you being told? So you've got a plan, you've tried it, it seems to work in your patient. Patient's getting better. That makes sense. Ivermectin is basically not only it's against parasites, but it's an antiviral drug. Works in the cellular mechanisms. So you're confused, but you're happy, but you're confused because the literature is conflicting. The patients are told different information. You're told different information, but you got a good result. So the question next is, what's the next question? That's why. Why did the patient get better? Why did this treatment work when everybody said it wouldn't work? Why, if I waited, is the patient getting worse? And what are the choices I have, which are very limited? Does that make sense? There's articles in the literature, pro and con. It shouldn't be in science. If people are using the same data, we should get the same answer. So something's wrong. And you find out that the literature has become politicized. Major journals that we had confidence in, like Lancet, Nature, New England Journal of Medicine, Journal of the American Medical Association, publish articles and then retract them. So you're troubled. But that's the truth. So the most important question is why, and you keep asking why, and you're going to find an answer. Now, this relates to what you do daily. You go to the operating room and you stand and watch your assistant in operation. What do you do with that 5 hours of time? What I did is I took this information, I got the operative report, I made some notes on it, I filed it away. Or if the patient that I worked on in the hospital leaves the hospital to get the discharge somewhere and still make some notes, I file that away. So what you're doing is compiling a living record of your personal experience with a whole variety of diseases. In your first year, you may see 500 patients, maybe more. 2 years, 1,000, maybe more. And you go up to 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 patients. That's a lot of experience. That's how they write textbooks. And you're writing your own textbook, which you know you've verified, you have faith and confidence in. You can compare that to what other people's experience is. You'll find it similar. And so don't discard that experience. Use it. It's very helpful to you. It'll be helpful long term. You may not read it later in life, but it helps you learn quickly. Now, what's the most important principle in life, in the laboratory? We know that there most of the research done is reasonable, fair, truthful, but there is research done that's not truthful. I just told you about some on this very important disease in major journals around the country. What's the principle? Do unto others as you would have done unto you. That wasn't followed. What would you want if you were the patient? You want to know the truth. You want to know what's been done elsewhere. You want to know it as a doctor. I had a doctor who came to me, did an operation 9 times because he read it in a textbook written by a major figure in the world. And he couldn't do the operation, didn't work. Well, he found out that certain details of the operation were left out of the book. That's not honest. So you have to do unto others as you would have done unto you. Because you can only operate with the truth. I can only operate with the truth. And as colleagues, we need to have the truth among ourselves. So I've left you with a set of principles: observation, data collection, research, ask the question why. What do you do with all this information? Record it and file it, and do unto others as you would want done unto you. I appreciate your attention. That's my email address. That's the address of SNI. Thank you very much. You enjoyed this presentation. The material provided in this program is for informational purposes and is not intended for use as diagnosis or treatment of a health problem or as a substitute for consulting a licensed medical professional. Please fill out your evaluation of this video to help us improve our programming and also obtain CME credit. The recorded session is available free on snidigital.org. If you have questions or comments, or you want to send your CME application, send it to ausman@snidigital.org. This program is supported by the James I. and Carolyn R. Ausman Educational Foundation, owner of SNI and SNI Digital, and the Waymaster Corporation, producers of the Leading Gen television series, Silent Majority Speaks and Role Models, and the Medical News Network. Thank you.